Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking a treatment provider, which you can easily do at SAMHSA's national helpline at findtreatment.gov or 1-800-622-4357. I also want to take this opportunity to thank our listeners and for the wonderful feedback that you provide, because it is so encouraging and we realize that we are getting our message across together with scientific data as well as experience. In the last episode, we talked about the misconceptions about marijuana. And in this one, we're going to talk about the psychiatric effects of marijuana. And we have promised that you will be surprised and very concerned.
Yes, the effects are so intense and many that a separate episode was necessary.
Yeah, obviously, it's always Ketley's idea, so we said, okay, fine. So do you want to start from the mild and go up to the shocking?
Well, in the last episode, we discussed what increases the risk of starting and developing cannabis use disorder. So, for example, depression can aggravate that, anxiety, persisting conduct problems in childhood or adolescent issues can cause cannabis use disorder, or even a pre-existing psychiatric problems, or, as we said, several other drugs such as alcohol, cigarettes, opioids,
right,
benzos, all of that can precipitate or trigger or maintain cannabis use.
So being the psychiatrist extraordinaire that you are, you want to take these one by one?
Well, we'll start with depression. Because individuals with depression are more likely to use marijuana. And I'm thinking about an individual who she began using it as a way to just help herself feel better. And of course, we know from what we said last time that the use of it aggravates the depression. But for some people, heavy marijuana users were more likely to develop major depression, not just the light use of it, occasional use of it. And adolescents who use marijuana were more likely to develop depression as well. So it's not just the older adults. And unfortunately, there's a higher chance of suicidal ideation or suicide attempt with the use of marijuana, of cannabis.
You know, all of us look at, and when we practice as well, we look through it through our lens.
Mm-hmm.
And being that I practice addiction medicine, it seems just very logical and natural to promote a drug-free brain. And so the patients ask me that, why do I need to stop marijuana? And I try to explain to them that it is better for you to function without medications and drugs in your brain. And place a lot of emphasis on not using marijuana, particularly in the young brain, which is not completely formed. It is forming. And while it is forming, you want to make sure that it does not have the detrimental effects of marijuana that are on board. But the patients who have listened to this advice and have quit marijuana, because it is part of my practice when they are in the opioid medication-assisted treatment, we really, really promote, and not just when they are using Suboxone or Vivitrol, but to explain to them the behavioral part of addiction, in which the brain needs to be free of all substances. And they, because they want to stay in the program, they quit the marijuana. And I remember a guy coming and saying that, you know, I feel alive again. I was literally, I was walking around like a zombie. And now that I've quit the marijuana, I can experience things again. And some of them can be a little, because you're so numbed, you know, comfortably numb, like Pink Floyd sang, that he realized that he was back to being, you know, a human being again.
I think it's sad that more people don't take us on the recommendation to abstain. More often than not, they would rather continue with the same pathologic behavior in spite of the negative consequences.
Correct.
And for me, in my office, and people will tell you that I'm a believer in the natural laws of health. Very basic things like eat healthy, you know, exercise, get your sleep, drink lots of water, you know, just do the basic things, get fresh air, get sunlight, but they will not do it. And if you say,
correct,
you stop using that joint that you have every evening, you might have a little bit more motivation to do a few more things. Nope, they will not.
Someone sent a nice meme on the internet which said that if your doctor does not ask you about your diet, about your exercise, about your employment, about your family life, and just pushes drugs, he's just a drug dealer. And yeah. I was like, oh, that's true.
Yeah, but you know, I wish they actually subscribe to the recommendation, because I do that all the time and I feel like a broken record. They don't.
But we have to admit, a lot of physicians don't do that.
A lot of physicians do not do that.
We just push medicines.
I can't say we, they.
I was meaning, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right.
I know what you mean, but that is not.
Not me either. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Bipolar disorder is another disorder that is associated with a higher risk of cannabis use. And the symptoms worsen. And there's a threefold increased risk of new onset of mania with the use of cannabis. And the risk of developing it is 4 times likely for bipolar 1 disorder and 3 times likely for bipolar 2 disorder, which I should define what that means.
Yeah, when we explain say, bipolar 1 and 2, because people, I'm surprised that a lot of people know, mm-hmm. but do define.
Yeah, and sometimes people have mood swings and they think they have bipolar, or because somebody gets angry easily, they have bipolar. No, Becky, that is not bipolar.
Becky.
Bipolar disorder is a specific entity in which an individual will have extremes in their mood to such a degree that they are impulsive. They are not just wasting money because TJ Maxx is having a sale, but they will buy widgets for orphans in South America, things that they don't need, they will use. And they'll stay up all night painting one room, not just because the room needed painted, but they'll paint it because they have this beautiful neon green that they thought was a good idea. They have racing thoughts. They talk a lot. They're very, very gregarious. They can do anything. So these are bipolar. And then they'll crash into a depression, which will last several weeks sometimes. And they'll go back and forth without treatment. Whereas the bipolar 2, the bipolar 1 often end up on a psychiatric unit when it's severe. Bipolar 2 may be more mild. They'll spend more money. They'll have these euphoric episodes. They'll have more creative energy. And then they'll go into a depression. But they don't have the extreme highs. But all of this is aggravated with the cannabis.
And the development of psychosis and schizophrenia is the scariest, isn't it?
Oh, that is to me very, very scary. I had a young man come to my office, probably about 17. The family brought him in because they couldn't get things under control with him. And as we were eliciting a history, I discovered that he had been using cannabis to manage his headaches. And he was using it throughout the day. And he was so paranoid and hostile in the office, I suggested to them that there may be an association between the cannabis he's smoking all day long and his paranoia and aggression. That was the only time I saw him.
Oh, there you go.
The only time I saw him, yeah. So it can cause transient psychosis, but can also trigger a more permanent state like the schizophrenia. There also seems to be a genetic influence on the propensity towards developing cannabis-induced psychosis. So what's my recommendation? Just don't do it.
Well, there you go again.
Just don't
so
do it.
So it exacerbates symptoms in individuals with established psychotic disorders such mm-hmm. as schizophrenia, and with the patient thinking quite the opposite mm-hmm. and not noticing at all. But the sad one is the development of schizophrenia in someone who has not had it before.
Right.
And that person is, because the development of schizophrenia in the disease, untouched by cannabis, is kind of like a gradual phenomenon, isn't it? But with cannabis, it can be so unexpected and so sudden that they don't know what to do with the auditory hallucinations and the voices that they hear. And like we mentioned in our previous episode, to be actually touched by this and actually see the patient die by suicide because of the development of cannabis-induced schizophrenia is something that I don't think I will ever recover from.
Yeah, I think it's very, very serious. And it's preventable. It's preventable.
Exactly.
Again, you know, we said this before, you don't know what you don't know until you know it. And when you know it, it's too late. It's too late. You know, so the best course of action is to avoid adding these substances to especially a developing brain. We also have anxiety disorders, too. That is an issue. 2 or 3 times more likely to develop anxiety disorder with the use of cannabis. But yet, just like cigarette smoke, people think, okay, I feel anxious, I'm just going to go out for a cigarette smoke and I'm going to feel better. I'm going to just smoke a joint and I'm going to feel better. When in reality, it is triggering, it is aggravating the anxiety.
And that is really the funny part, because I always ask patients, why do you use cocaine? Why do you use marijuana? And with marijuana, they'll frequently say, it controls my anxiety. And all of you, and they poo-poo our other medications mm-hmm. and say, you know, they don't help me. Yeah. They don't help me. And not realizing that the marijuana is actually worsening their anxiety rather than helping it. It has just, and I really believe in the placebo effect. Yeah. And it has that placebo effect and the feeling that, oh, it's controlling my anxiety and it's helping me to sleep.
Yeah. But unfortunately, though, the way I view it from their moccasins, I think their perception is their reality. So irrespective of what we present to them in scientific studies, they feel it does this for them, so they will continue to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. And also the power of suggestion. And mm-hmm. and this is the funny part in which you're put in your place when the patient comes back for a follow-up and you tell them that, did you do such and such that I had prescribed for you to do? And they said, no, my neighbor told me that that and that works better. And so it's like, oh, so many years of medicine
right.
and so many years of experience. You're going to listen to your neighbor?
Right.
I don't say that, obviously, but it's kind of like hurts yeah. a bit. And it's the patient not realizing how much of a losing proposition that is. But it also tells you the power of suggestion that someone says, oh, well, try this. This works really good.
Yeah. I think sometimes people think we're somehow making money and prescribing medications to them. Like there's an ulterior motive.
Yes.
I don't know. I have to figure out how that works so I can figure out if I can actually make that happen. I'm just kidding, audience members. I'm just kidding. But there is no ulterior motive except to see people get better, you know. And I've had people tell me, I'm a believer in exercise. I think exercise, and I've teased with many people, and I've said, if I could bottle it and sell it on the corner of Airport and Burn, out of my trunk, I would bottle exercise and I would sell it.
Yeah, you say that.
And then people will come back and say, well, you said I would feel better, but I don't feel any better. I said, but you have to give it time. The more natural the recommendation, the more time it requires. But the effect is more long-lasting mm-hmm. if you go this route. But often they will take someone else's feedback before
yes,
they'll take ours.
The physicians.
Or if they have to work at it, they don't want it. They'd rather give me a pill, will you?
Yeah, we are a society. We want immediate effect.
Immediate effect.
Yeah.
But the cannabis also, the prevalence of its use in those with PTSD is also elevated. And for the same reason as anxiety disorders, they feel that this is helping them. But if you're convinced it's helping you, irrespective of what we say, they're not going to stop. But it does not help their anxiety.
And I feel even worse because veterans have such a high incidence of dying by suicide that they use marijuana thinking that it's going to take care or is taking care of their PTSD, not realizing that it's making it worse. And the same applies to attention deficit disorder, that it's making it worse.
It's making it worse. 10 to 30% prevalence of cannabis use among adults with ADHD. They do think it slows them down. They think their brain is quieter when they are using it. But again, it's aggravating the underlying problem.
also with personality disorders, a comorbidity between obsessive compulsive disorder and cannabis use, also an association between lifetime or current cannabis use among people with antisocial, dependent, and borderline personality disorders.
Yeah, I have a few faces that just can't be for my eyes of these various personality disorders and their experiences with not only the cannabis, but other drugs of abuse. There are also other side effects with this medication, what it can do to you. In addition to what we've just listed, it can impair your cognitive function. It can affect your concentration, your memory, learning, all in a dose-dependent manner, of course, but it affects you in the opposite of what you think it's causing. Opposite. Yeah.
It's really interesting that, you know, the way that marijuana is used, perhaps that's where the expression stoned comes from. Mm. And patients who have successfully stopped marijuana, like I mentioned in my previous in our previous episode, they're so grateful because they were walking around like robots, but now they've, you know, started working like human beings again, and they're able to experience life to its fullest.
That's one of the main things. Even before I looked into the issues with cannabis use and withdrawals and dependence, I found that most people had issues with dullness and flatness and lack of motivation, lack of drive and ambition, all subtle things that you don't know that you don't know that you're flat. You don't know.
Exactly.
And you're just living this sub-therapeutic life, when in reality, without it, you might have more ambition, you might have more creativity. Mm-hmm. And I've had just a couple of people in all my years take the challenge and give it up and come back and tell me, well, you know, you're right. I was doing a little bit more than I usually did. Mm-hmm. I didn't just sit there and just smoke in the corner, you know, at the end of the day for a couple of hours and then go to bed. And that's how I spent my life. But the dullness, the flatness,
The dullness, that's a very, very good point.
It's very real.
And the part about how it impairs learning is just so, I don't understand that. That when it, particularly the group that uses marijuana the most needs to be learning. Mm-hmm. And they are the most cognitively affected in terms of learning with the marijuana. It's just so.
But it's like, it's almost like, how do you get someone to consider something that they don't see as a problem? I mean, like,
It just has to be that moment. Yeah. You know, it has to be the aha moment.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, whether it's weight management or whether it is addiction, substance use disorder, that they have to do it for the right reason. They have to do it for themselves. Mm-hmm. You cannot do it for threats from the spouse that I'm going to leave you if you don't quit, or, you know, for other reasons as far as, you know, weight management is concerned. The person has to have that inner thing in which they want to do it for themselves, and they have to reach that particular point in which they want the change. Unless that is, just like we've talked about, you know, the motivation pill, the motivation has to come from within. If the motivation is not there and it's not the right kind of motivation, then there will not be success.
But I think as physicians, we do have to find a way to connect enough with the individual so that we can, there's a term in psychiatry, we call it being someone's introject. What that means is they may not have their own, but they have a little bit of you within them, and they'll say, what would Doc do? What would she do? Okay, how would she answer this? I want to just wham him, but she would say, oh, don't do that. You know, so we can try to become a little bit of an introject for them so that they'll attach to us as a reason why they should try this. And then maybe once they try it, they can then cultivate that desire for themselves. So I think we have to find a way, because they don't know what they don't know. So why are they going to know it?
Also, I think we have to go away from the money-making part that medicine has sadly become,
unfortunately,
based on, in which they, you know, someone with a stopwatch is watching how much time you're spending with the patient.
It's a
and
fact.
That's why I feel so grateful that the both of us are in private practice, not accounting to anyone else.
Yeah.
And we can spend the amount of time that we need to spend with the patient for the amount of time that they need to be spent with.
Yeah. And maybe they'll even pay us for it. That'd be nice. I'm not kidding. I want to be paid for my service. Yes, I do. I get distracted.
There is a great deal, though. I always tell people that medicine is my first love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I've been able to negotiate the ups and downs, the financial ups and downs of medicine that have happened and continue to happen. For a life-saving procedure, I have to go and spend so much time to provide the ICD-10 code so that a test can be done. Right. So it's very, very painful, but
medicine,
and it's so, particularly addiction medicine is so rewarding because we cause a change within 3 months of the person's mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. So I have absolutely no regrets. Particularly because of being able to spend that time with the patient and the change that we can create. So it's definitely possible. So what would you say would be the take-home points, because you're the take-home queen, okay, of this episode?
I don't know if I should mention a famous person's name.
Oh, my God. It's becoming old now.
Oh, okay, fine. I will not mention her name. I will say that as a psychiatrist, I would recommend avoiding these substances. For a number of reasons, it can aggravate depression, it can aggravate anxiety, it can impair learning, it can worsen bipolar disorder, it can cause other physical problems, including, I just remembered that one of the things we talked about earlier was emergency room visits, you know, are more so with cannabis use, but it can cause so many things that are adverse to your life that you really don't want this. And worst case scenario for me that I see, well, I guess it's not the worst, but it's really bad. It's the flatness, it's the dullness, it's the lack of productivity.
And the psychosis.
There's so many reasons to just leave it alone. Leave it alone. And if you need something to do, go for a walk. Go for a walk.
Yeah, actually, you're so right. What a difference.
It increases the dopamine in your system and it helps you feel better. It helps your mood. It helps everything. Go for a walk.
I have another one that there's very little in life that a hot shower cannot cure. So take a hot shower.
Take a hot shower. Take a hot shower.
We really hope this episode was informative and we are feeling very encouraged by the wonderful feedback that we are getting. And as we go through the major drug classes, our next episode will be on the use of benzodiazepines like Xanax, etc. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Kelly Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, and you will see the very wonderful effects that that has on their lives. For it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. See you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.